Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help in your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about Matthew, the tax collector turned disciple, and just what does he have to do with kingdom living? And as we talk about this, feel free to join the discussion or make comments or ask questions by contacting us. And our email is 4@fourthstream.com. That's the number 4@fourthstream.com.
Well, we're following this very excellent book called Kingdom, Finding Your True Self by Dave Nadler. so you can find this book if you contact us where Bernadette just said. And, you know, it's basically a look at Matthew, because the kingdom was so clearly explained by Jesus, but it's really amplified in the book of Matthew, because the Jews would have understood that concept a little differently than anybody else around them. So because this gospel is written and targeted toward the Jews, the idea of the kingdom is well taught in the book, the Gospel of Matthew.
Right, and we know that Matthew was a tax collector. So tell me about Matthew, and what was the big deal that he was a tax collector? I mean, you know, we don't like the IRS all up in our business,
right,
and stuff.
Right.
But these guys were really hated. And, you know, they weren't just a bureaucracy. They were individuals who were really, I mean, they were put in, they were lumped in with tax collectors and sinners.
Yeah. You know, and there was a reason for that. The reason that they were put together was that, you know, they were servants of the Roman government, kind of like first century IRS agents. So that can tell you right there the entry point. But what was really unique about these guys is because the way Rome was structured. So let's say Rome wanted $100 from you. And if the tax collector could get $500 from you, they could keep the $400.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So it made them hated.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
And they were also from your own people because, you know, you want to send an agent in, right, who knows the neighborhood. And so that's why people like Matthew were vilified and put into the context of being tax gatherers and sinners, because they were kind of the worst, because they were exploiting the people around them, and they had ultimate authority in doing it.
See, now that's what I've kind of missed. I got the part that they could keep the extra, that they could charge whatever they wanted. What I kind of missed was that they were also Jews and could, and knew the system, knew the people. Oh,
yeah.
Man. Knew who they could charge a lot of.
Right. And so the more you gathered, the more you could keep. And that's why they were looked at as thieves. And, you know, in the law, a thief was anathema. So they just did, they were just like at the bottom of the pole.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Matthew's story. But that's important to understand aspects of that. Because when you came from where Matthew did, not only did he have to go somewhere that didn't come naturally to him, he had to leave something behind. Mm-hmm. And if you had a sweet deal like Matthew had, you had to exchange that sweet deal for other things. Now, but can you imagine the things that he gained from that exchange?
Yes, but he didn't know that.
Of course not.
I mean, it's a risk.
Well, that's the problem. You know, when you encounter God and you recognize that he's a king and he tells you what to do, well, you kind of need to live with what that means. But as you live with it, you realize God didn't come to constrict people.
Mm-hmm.
He came to set us free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you sense in the book of Matthew. By the time he gives us this account of Jesus's life, he has an understanding of freedom that he did not have when he first came in as that tax collector and sinner.
I enjoy reading about his conversion. It's in Matthew 9, starting at verse 9. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him, which you just think, is that all Jesus said? Or did they have some kind of a conversation?
Well, there was preparatory work that happened. You know, there were thousands of people that were going out and being baptized by John the Baptist, who was telling them, somebody greater is coming after me. So those were people who recognized that there was something intrinsically wrong. He also, by sitting in his tax collector's booth, he got to watch what was going on, because you know
all the scuttlebutt.
Well, it would be in a prominent place, and as that happened, he knew who it was. And so when he said, "Follow me," that was a very personal thing. It wasn't like he looked at the street and went, "Follow me." He looked at Matthew and he said, "Follow me." That's pretty cool, isn't it?
So apparently Matthew did, and he must have invited Jesus to have dinner because he said while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. So it wasn't just Matthew. It was many of those.
Well, and they were all friends. So Of course your friends would come to your house if something, if somebody notable was coming over for dinner.
So when the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? And I love this. On hearing this, Jesus said, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners.
Yeah, and that has so much depth in it. And it sets up why there was such antipathy between Jesus and the religious leaders, because they had a totally different standard on what righteousness was. And it basically didn't involve any kind of humility or any ownership of their own deficiencies. And it was something that tax collectors and sinners, they were used to being excoriated by their culture. So it was not as big of a leap for them to understand what it meant to have deep heart need.
So give me some examples of Pharisees and how far away from mercy they'd gotten.
Well, they would look at a tax collector and they would vilify him, but then they would figure out how to extract dollars from the people, you know, whether it was through the sacrificial system or, you know, whether they were extracting just the idea that they were recognized or whatever. They wore different kinds of clothing. They had different symbols that made them above everybody else. So they just had their own way of getting what they wanted out of people. And in that sense, they saw themselves as a cut above, when in reality, they were a cut below the tax gatherers and sinners. Now, how weird is that?
That's like upside down.
Well, and Jesus does. He turns so many things upside down. And that's the nature of the kingdom. The kingdom comes into the world and it turns everything upside down. And if you try to just take the kingdom and integrate it into your life, you are going to be very disappointed. And this is one of the issues I have with religion. You know, often religion just tries to accommodate Jesus, but still get whatever that group wants to have happen.
When I think about the Pharisees, they just brought so many rules. You couldn't do this on the Sabbath. You could only take so many steps on the Sabbath. It seemed like they had lots of rules. Instead of freedom. And Jesus was bringing freedom and getting rid of some of those rules that were just meaningless.
Yes. So, you know, when the king comes first, which we discussed a little bit about, you know, in the book of Matthew and in all the gospels, I think the church is mentioned 4 times. The kingdom is mentioned over 100 times. It's because if you look at Jesus's teaching, his kingship came first. He came to establish the kingdom. And then the church, it literally means ecclesia. It means called out. So they were called out of the world into the kingdom for the purposes of God. And that's what the church was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of the, I don't know, kingdom spirituality order that sometimes I think is missed by religion and big portions of religion. So that whole idea, when king comes first, then it's followed by his kingdom, then his church will flow powerfully into the world in any age. Well, if you don't encounter that authority that Matthew experienced, I mean, when he said, come, he stood up and came because he was responding to what he was seeing, and he recognized that he had a need, and he responded to the authority of his master.
Mm-hmm. I love then that when he wrote Matthew, the book of Matthew, I love how each gospel is kind of written to a certain group of people. Just like if I was writing to someone, I would write to someone that I know, or I might want write to family or friends, or all the way out to acquaintances. But he's obviously writing to people that he knows. And so he has a lot of the genealogies in it. And for a long time, I would read that and go, who cares about that?
Right.
But the Jews really cared about it.
Yeah.
So, but what I've had to learn in reading that, because, you know, those are sprinkled all throughout the Bible, it makes me realize that God cares about each one of those lives, and that my name is somewhere in genealogy, and my life has, it matters, it has a story within everything, and my life is supposed to be a part of that kingdom and taking Jesus to my sphere of influence.
Sometimes I need to write a book about that. That's an interesting concept, the importance of personal story.
As in Curious Journey.
Yes. Well, you know, one thing that is really striking about what the picture that's being painted in Matthew in juxtaposed next to who Matthew was is that we have a tendency to associate with the people who are cool, who have recognition, who have influence over other people. And Jesus went the opposite way. And it was interesting that while they were checking him out, everybody wanted to associate with him. But when it came right down to what he was saying the kingdom was, mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine if Jesus had decided he was going to dump the Father's will and say, okay, it's a revolution. We're going to take over, and we are going to go against the Jews. We are going to go against Rome, and we're going to take over. I mean, think about what kind of an insurrection there could have mm-hmm. been and how the kingdom would have just died.
Right.
And that's part of why he's a different kind of king than any other king that has ever lived on the face of the earth, because it wasn't about being cool. It wasn't about amassing power and influence over people. It was about doing his Father's will.
And it was about being a servant, which there's nothing fun on the outside about being a servant.
I know there are a lot of people with many different feelings about church. Some people feel let down. There are those who feel angry. And some even use church experiences to justify unengagement and even laziness. And there are others who place their church experience in the place of their king. And all of these things, while they're not desirable, are understandable. So I get it. But, you know, when it comes to the kingdom, you cannot afford to miss the concept and the idea that kingdom is all about the king. And so for me, it hasn't been about becoming more religious. It's been getting to know my king better mm-hmm. because he has plenty to say about not only how I'm supposed to act, my exterior life, he also has a lot to say about my interior life. And that's where kingship starts. It starts in the heart, and it starts with the Holy Spirit directing us and us being directable, because when you submit your will, you become directable to God.
It seems like for people who have felt let down by the church, that the idea of serving a king and the kingdom would be a new entry point for them.
Yes.
One of the things you mentioned too is you talk about deep peace, and just that when you serve the king, you know, the goal of is a satisfied mind and the deep peace that comes from really understanding all that. And so, how has deep peace been defined for you in your life?
Well, I think as I've gotten more, I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but more aware of who God is and how he works, well, it kind of knocks out my need to grab a hold of things in life, you know, to assert myself or to mm-hmm. watch out for myself. Because if he really is a king, he has authority over everything, whether people realize it or not. And how that's impacted me is I've been able to relax a lot more with how I live my life, because I know that his authority is over all and above all and through all and in all, and I don't have to take those things into my own hands.
Yeah, I think authority is a big one for me too, just understanding it better. But for me, it's kind of the same thing as you, but for me, it's a little more about believing that I'm safe there instead
yes.
of trying to reject that I'm safe there.
Kingdom, finding your true self. Go to forestream.com, where you'll find a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to forestream.com and click on the radio button.
Together, we're finding hope at forestream.com.